else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure, in which you will hear in the background cats dancing on the snare drums and yowling, as you are hearing right now. And we will gradually move the cats off into the distance. Something like that. Anyway, this is The Personal Wealth Coach, and I'm supposed to do a disclosure at this point and tell you that The Personal Wealth Coach is not only an impressive weekly radio presentation.
By whose opinion? Impressive may be the impression left on your face by your arm as you fall asleep while listening. It leaves an impression. There may be some drool involved, too. But it is not only an impressive...
Well, it's impressive to me. Let me tell you, when I have to get up early on a Saturday morning, when I really don't want to get up early and
right.
study news and stuff, and then come in here and drag you in here too.
Wait, we're supposed to know what we're talking about? We're supposed to look at news and things? Wait, I'm going to have to change how I do this now.
Yes, you probably are. And then for 2 hours, talk to foam balls. And try to sound interesting while we talk to foam balls. That's impressive to me as a task.
So,
I mean, now whether we do it in a manner that impresses other people, you know, there are negative impressments.
So there's the impression of an arm on your face when you fall asleep.
It's yes.
The drool effect.
There's the impression that Jimmy Carter made as president.
Yeah.
I mean, we all remember Jimmy Carter.
Impressions.
It's not a very positive impression in my mind.
Right.
But I have an impression, you know. So.
I have an Elvis impression. Do you want to hear it?
Yes. I'm listening.
Yeah, that was my Elvis impression.
I couldn't hear it.
Well, that's because he doesn't talk anymore.
Yeah, but I couldn't hear it.
Well, that's the point. Anyway, this is not only an impressive radio talk show.
Show. Oh, you said show. He said it.
I am being influenced by peer pressure. There are so many people around that call radio programs show. It is insane, but I will occasionally mess up.
Right. It's really a tell.
It is a tell.
And anyway, also, not only is this a debatably impressive radio presentation.
Impressive to us, yes.
But it is also the name of an investment advisory firm in Salado, Texas, that manages portfolios for people and has been around in various forms and formats now for 33 and a half years, and which is really a long time.
Yeah. 33 years is
33
not,
years.
Unless you're a rock.
A third of a century.
If you're a rock, it's a very short period of time. But
well, I don't know.
For the rest
I mean,
of us.
It all depends on what kind of rock you are. You could have rolled down the hill 10 years ago, and so 33 years would still be a long time.
Something, yeah.
Anyway, so you are listening to The Personal Wealth Coach, and we do talk about things economic.
As well as rocks and the impressions that your arms leave on your face while listening
and,
to us.
And human behavior to some or more or less degree. And things to do with investing in your personal investment portfolios and things of that ilk. We do not talk about team sports because we don't know anything about team sports. We play a game and we keep score with money. All that other stuff doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Well, some of it does. The amount of money that team sports players get paid is a never-ending wonder to me. Anyway, telephone numbers if you'd like to call in here. And today is October the 3rd.
The 3rd.
It's the 3rd of October. If you, you know, I mean, that's one of the things I love to listen to the Irish when they say the 3rd, the 33rd. Anyway, of October. The telephone numbers, if you're in East Bell County and you'd like to call to make a comment or ask a question or do anything that has something to do with money or economics or investments, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And you know the little stickies here with the numbers on them?
I remember when they were new.
They're gradually darkening.
They are almost illegible at this point.
And at some point down the road, we will no longer be able to read the number, and we won't be able to see that the one underneath it says Master Control. I've always, you know, I've never messed with that little knob that says Master Control.
Well, that's because if you mess with that one,
the whole world,
everyone gets quiet or loud.
Lots of knobs in here, and a literally yellowing, started off as kind of a silver color at some point. You can tell. And it's been gradually turning yellow over the years. I don't know why the panel turns yellow and the rest of it doesn't, but it's pretty fascinating. Anyway, so telephone numbers in here again, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
Obviously, nobody has any questions or thoughts, or else they're just not listening. Okay, doesn't make any difference, right?
Doesn't make any difference to me. I'm not listening.
What happened?
Good change. Good changes have happened.
Really?
Yes. We had a whole week go by since last week.
Really?
And during that time period, we had weather.
Yes.
And
Or not.
Well, we had weather unless you were in the... And then you could have space weather if you're outside of
atmosphere. But. And we have a caller on 773-1400, which is kind of what I was hoping would happen. Caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
I was just wondering how much you're scared by what's going on in Syria, and I'll hang up and listen.
That's a good question. All right.
No, the answer is, how much are you scared? Answer the question. How much? Let's not be like politicians.
Right. How much are we scared in Syria? Well, I'm not in Syria,
I'm actually not scared at all by what's going on in Syria. it's really simple. If you really want to understand this, I think in my opinion, boy, that's a caveat emptor.
Yes.
Read The Guns of August or any other good book on what caused World War I to happen, and then take a look at what's going on in that same part of the world where World War I really got started. And you're going to have to, and the parallels are just astonishing. In this episode, Germany will be played by Russia.
Right.
And France will be played by the United States of America.
There are some other pieces to the puzzle that I'm going to throw in here, too. We commented about Ukraine and about the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And I realize people are now of the opinion that Russia didn't really invade Ukraine, except that I have to remind people, and they say, I forgot about that. Crimea was taken and annexed. It's now part of Russia, and people have forgotten about this.
And there's a part of Ukraine where there's still, where the Russians have total influence and they have equipment and troops.
Right. One of the things that has been interesting, though, is as the Russian influence has waned in Ukraine, it has coincided with the Ukrainian rebels' inability to pay for the equipment.
Right.
So the Russians have had a massive hit to their economy, multiple massive hits to the economy. Mm-hmm. They've got tariffs and sanctions. They've got oil prices through the floor. So, and by the way, oil on the floor is slippery. So
through the floor is worse, because that means your basement where your heater is gets full of oil.
Floor is really not a good situation. So for Russia, they're looking around going, what do we do? So they have been talking with people that are willing to buy weapons, because they have a couple of high-tech industries in Russia. And I say a couple because they're not very well balanced. They do software a bit.
They have old spacecraft.
They have old spacecraft, and they will allow people to pay them money to go up to space. And
including us, by the way, the United States.
Yes, and they have weapons technology, which is pretty advanced. They're coming out with a new MiG that is stealthy and is supposed to be right up there with the F-22. Now, they don't have the money to make very many of them, but they have this program. They have begun to sell weapons to war zones, and when wars calm down, they make war zones, and they sell weapons to people around their country. They're selling weapons to Iran, and they're selling weapons to Syria right now.
I just published a newsletter at 2 o'clock this morning. There was some question as to when I would actually get it out. It went out at 2 o'clock this morning.
Right,
shows what That's diligent, seems, weird person
seems
I am.
A little bit strange.
Anyway, and in there, I mentioned that Russia, there are five major economic experiments going on in the world. There's a lot of smaller ones, but they're just reruns of old ones that don't work. But there's five, or some of them do, but there's five major economic experiments going on in the world. China is running a major socioeconomic experiment. The United States is running one. Europe is running one. a different one. Japan is running one. Russia is running one. Now, Great Britain is actually running a hybrid, so you could actually throw them in there, too, as a separate one. But the Russian socioeconomic experience, you might as well, I mean, I know you're going to, the people will think this is really weird, but you might as well take Mein Kampf, translate it into Russian and back into English, and pretty much you got what's going on.
Yeah.
The Putin is effectively a dictator. His current role as president is technically unconstitutional, but nobody's challenging him on it, and the few people who have mentioned it suddenly cease to exist, so the word gets around after a while. You don't, and it's hard to remember, but Hitler was elected.
Yeah.
And Hitler basically played the same game, and it is what he has going on in there is National Socialism. It isn't communism. It is very much the same thing that Hitler instilled. It's nationalism. And it's nationalism where the government runs everything, which is National Socialism.
Right.
And this is what he's doing right now is he's keeping people employed and he's keeping them happy. And this is going to sound a little strange. He's doing it with borrowed money and despite sanctions. He has the NATO commander, I don't remember which general it was, but the U.S. NATO commander earlier this year made a statement before Congress that didn't raise a lot of hackles or anything. But he said something that was very, very, very significant. Russia is on a five-year military buildup, and the reason he says it's 5 years is because 5 years in the future, economically, Russia will no longer be able to afford its military. It is building new equipment. It is building new. It is recruiting people. It is retraining people. It is building a huge military force, modern military force, but it is doing so at an economically unsustainable rate, which means within the next 5 years, Russia has got to either use their military to grab somebody else's money,
or they're going to have to lay off their military.
Or start dismantling their economy will literally collapse the way the Soviet Union's economy collapsed in 1991 from excessive spending on the military. We, on the other hand, spend hugely more than Russia. Matter of fact, our military budget in the United States is larger than the combined military budgets of every other nation on the planet.
No, I mean, it used to be. It is now larger than the combined military budgets of most of the other countries on
really?
The planet.
Really? I thought we were still up there in the number one
No,
position.
Sequestration has had an effect.
Okay, well, so we're pretty close to it. But the point is that if the Russians went up against the United States militarily, despite the fact it would be on the other side of the planet, unless we decided to invade Russia, which would probably be a pretty bad idea, we would kick them around the block, but we have to first be willing to go to war with them, which the Russians don't think we are, and this is World War I happening. Note, in World War I, unlike World War II, the Allies did not invade Germany. I want to emphasize this again. The war ended with the Germans still in France. The German economy just collapsed. And the Germans sued for peace, and the Allies basically strangled them to the point where they guaranteed another war. We're coming so close to repeating that behavior. And the point is that Putin, in order to keep his people loyal to him and happy and convinced that his propaganda is true and keep power under his control and everything else that he needs to exist, must have an enemy and a war going on. And he has chosen to attack U.S.-trained troops in the field of Syria.
Yeah.
And there are probably U.S. special forces off the books, hidden in there. And the very real potential exists at this point. Although the United States and the Europeans who are involved in the war against ISIS are working really, really hard to avoid this, a distinct possibility exists that Russia and the United States will get into it in Syria. I don't think it'll actually happen in Syria. It'll happen wherever the next place is. If Putin basically gets away with spitting in our face the next president, whoever he or she may be, is going to get a challenge.
Yeah, and this is a statement that's pretty negative about the current administration. I'm going to lay it all out there. The Obama foreign policy has been abysmal from the beginning.
Vacillating.
Yeah, he has not maintained a united front with past presidents, and he's certainly not going to maintain a united front with future presidents. He's basically making each decision on foreign policy as if it stands alone, and it isn't influenced by the other things happening in the world. And that's really dumb when it comes to dealing with anything complex.
This is one of the critical things, folks, that we as an electorate are responsible for and need to take responsibility for. The President of the United States has as his has two major things he's supposed to do under the Constitution. Number one, conduct foreign policy, defense, and so on. Two, execute the law passed by Congress. We tend to elect our presidents to set domestic policy, which the Constitution does not authorize the president to do. So when you get a president, whether it's Jimmy Carter or Barack Hussein Obama, who is focused on domestic policy, you get an ineffective presidency. Ronald Reagan did not focus on domestic policy.
It's kind of interesting because the way our system is designed, the president doesn't have a whole lot of impact on domestic policy. He gets a loud voice, he gets the attention of the media, and he can influence what his party in politics is planning. But he doesn't really hand legislation to Congress and expect it to pass. In fact, there's not been a single budget recommended by Obama, written by Obama, given to Congress that has ever passed.
Or by George W. Bush.
Or by George W. Bush.
Or
I mean, you
by
just go
Clinton
way
or
back
by anybody else.
Because the president is really good as an executive leader, a commander. He's not good at the bureaucratic, mind-numbing drivel that happens in Congress. And everybody that gets elected as president thinks, well, I'm going to push my agenda. Well, you can. You can push your agenda. If you say, I want health care passed, then you can push it. In this case, he was elected at the same time that there was a majority in the House and the Senate of Democrats, and they were able to push through without a single Republican vote the Affordable Care Act. It's got some good things in it. It's got some bad things in it. The good things in it were also included in the Republican bills that had not passed in the past.
Not passed in the past?
Passed in the past.
Oh, I love that. That's good, yes. They had not passed in the past.
But his actions are supposed to be defined by the reaction of the rest of the world. Now, he came into office and was almost immediately given a Nobel Peace Prize. And that was not because...
I really wondered, I mean...
It was a race conflict issue. And it's one that I think he... It was a representation. I don't know that he should have gotten. I think maybe the United States should have gotten it, that the first black president was elected. We have really come through a lot to have the majority of the country elect someone who's black. That's pretty amazing. That's worth noting. And the Nobel folks said, oh, well, let's give a prize for that. That's cool.
They should. And if we elect a woman, they should probably give one to a woman, too.
Well, you would think so, but Margaret Thatcher didn't get one.
Yeah, that's my... That's
Elizabeth the First or the Second didn't get one. Victoria didn't get one, so, you know...
Well, they weren't
giving
out,
around
they
yet.
Weren't giving out Nobel Prizes for
Nobel
Elizabeth
hadn't,
the First. First Queen of England did not get a Nobel Prize.
Nobel hadn't invented dynamite yet,
right.
So he wasn't giving money out to people for being peaceful.
She probably wouldn't have been queen very long had he already invented dynamite.
So what it comes back to is the responsibility of the president is to make sure that Congress doesn't do anything really dumb. That's what the veto
That's
is for.
One of them.
And to make sure that the United States is secure from domestic and foreign invasion. And when I say domestic.
Domestic invasion?
Yeah. Well, we did have a time period where that happened in the middle of the 19th century.
Yes.
Where we had you know, whatever way you want to look at it, there was a conflict domestically.
It's called domestic tranquility.
Right, right.
The Constitution says domestic tranquility.
Right. I believe that tranquility and civil are similar. Civil
right,
means
right.
nice and kind, and a civil war is
actually,
domestic tranquil war. Wait a minute. Hey.
Just send a bunch of federal agents all over the country to put Prozac in the water supply.
Right, that'll do it. Everyone's happy. Domestic tranquility has been achieved.
Now. Right.
Okay, constitutionally. Okay, so when it comes to foreign policy, there has been a lockstep foreign policy that goes back before Nixon. That goes back to Truman. It comes to the end of World War II, and it just continues one step after
right.
another. We must show a united front to the rest of the world, or they're going to hurt us.
And we have to have a consistent policy, and the policy is we fight enemies of the United States over there rather than over here.
Right.
Because the battlefield loses every battle.
Yes. We have a new set of technology that allows us to fight without fighting, to fight from a distance. And it doesn't work very well in completely destabilizing the enemy because they can go, they can hide, there's a lot of things they can do. Unless you have people there or unless we get really, really advanced and have robots that are able to cover the ground all over the place, we're going to need people on the ground. And in Syria, as well as Iraq, as well as Afghanistan to some extent, we have made mistake after mistake after mistake, beginning with the invasion by saying we're not going to send a lot of people. The reality
is pulling out. Well, we made the first mistake before that. And I'm going to give credit to Hillary Rodham Clinton. When she was in the Senate, she said something.
What was that?
In the hearings on Iraq and
Afghanistan.
And Afghanistan. She said, I erred in that I did not demand that if we were going to go to war, we issue a declaration of war
right.
and do it right.
See, that's kind of the key. The president should have asked for a declaration of war.
Against Afghanistan.
Against Afghanistan. We should have invaded, and we should have done it in a way that we did in Germany and Japan,
mm-hmm.
which is to say, we take over the infrastructure, we take over everything,
mm-hmm.
and we do it for long enough to get stability on the ground and allow them, with a lot of influence from us, to devise their own constitution and so on. And well, Iraq devised a constitution. It's just it's hundreds of pages long. You can't have a constitution
right.
that's hundreds of pages long.
Unless
you're in Texas. But we have a simple constitution federally.
Yeah.
And that trumps the Texas constitution.
And there's a reason for that. I actually read a couple of books on this and some good articles on this. If you declare war, and this, by the way, is why George H.W. Bush, who doesn't get a lot of respect but probably should, decided...
I give him a lot of respect.
Who did not invade Iraq for a very simple reason. His advisors told him, if you decide to invade a sovereign country rather than liberating a country where the leaders have asked you to do so...
Right.
You need... This is exactly what, I don't remember who the Secretary of State, George something, I can't remember his name, told him, if you break it, it's yours. You bear full responsibility for the outcome. And he reminded George H.W. Bush, we declared war on Germany and Japan in the early 1940s.
James Baker.
James Baker. We invaded Japan and Germany in the early 1940s, and we still have American troops there in the 21st century.
It's an obligation forever. Because
right.
while we have given authority to Japan and Germany, and their countries are completely at peace,
sovereign,
we still have troops on the ground there, specifically because we invaded them. Now, we hold them as peacekeeping, whatever. They're not occupation forces anymore, but Germany's not been invading other countries.
Yes.
Japan's not been invading other countries. And if you look at their history before we invaded, they were doing it a lot.
And there was war.
We're trying to do war
over and over again there.
On a low budget, and it makes it more expensive. Right. We're trying to do war on the save the soldier approach, and war is not fun. If war is something that if you commit to war, you should go to war. And we've been doing gentleman's warfare, and that's the way the media expects it.
And that's the kind of war, by the way, that World War I was. It was a war where you didn't invade and take responsibility for the other guy's country. You defeated their armed forces. You left their population in chaos and poverty. And sure enough, surprisingly enough,
we had another war right afterwards. Not right, but pretty close.
Within a couple of decades, they got very, very frustrated and rose up, and they got a dictator of some kind, and the war happened again. And the French and the Germans, by the way, did this for 1,000 years.
We should be able to learn from this. And when we're talking about Iraq, when we withdraw from Iraq and leave them unstable with our withdrawal, when we withdraw from Afghanistan and leave them unstable with our withdrawal, it is worse, in my opinion, than having left them uninvaded. And they were a danger to us, a clear and present danger to all of our interest and our well-being. Iraq had a dictator who still claimed to be at war with us.
He publicly declared just before the invasion he was at war with the United States.
In an interview with Dan Rather.
would attack us in whatever means he could. And
he said, I have not lost the war, when he was asked by Dan Rather about the original Gulf War. He said, I didn't lose the war, I lost the battle. When the head of a state that's a dictator, that now says he's currently at war with the United States, while the United States is saying, you need to step down or we're going to invade, right after we'd been attacked on our home ground by a much smaller budgeted group in Al-Qaeda, and then Afghanistan's going on. If you put this together and you say, I am going to do something, but I'm not really going to commit to it. I'm just kind of push over there a little bit. I'm going to be really upset, and I'm going to go over there, but I'm not going to commit everybody for the next few generations to what I'm doing. Then you're really not committed to it.
Nobody. Going into World War I, to draw this parallel, literally no nation in Europe wanted a war.
Yeah.
And yet none of the nations, and there was a, and I've read the literature from that time, not comments on it, but actually the literature from the time preceding World War I, military literature when I was in the Army, there was a universal belief that it was impossible to have a world war at that point, that it just simply couldn't happen.
Well, we have the same belief today.
Right, that's what I'm trying to say. Because of the advances in weaponry would create such slaughter on the battlefield that it would be impossible to have a war. Well, guess what? Since we've had nuclear weapons, we've made a point of never declaring war. Because to declare war means you are going to totally defeat your enemy. And that might take nuclear weapons, and since they're so unthinkable, we don't think about them. So nobody declares war, because nobody wants to do the unspeakable or the horrible thing.
A police operation where we're going to show up and be police, and it's going to be our laws, not your laws. Mm-hmm. That's not real.
If we were to get into it with Russia, it's not a matter of, like Iran, Russia may develop nuclear weapons.
No, Russia has them and Russia has enough to destroy the planet. So do we.
And
we could together, we could destroy the planet quite a few times. Wouldn't that be nice?
And it's World War I was a war in which the Allies did not invade Germany because they were afraid that Germany would unleash chemical weapons on population centers around Europe. Well, that's the same story. Now, interestingly enough, and I think this is absolutely fascinating, the Germans had chemical weapons in World War II, and they never used them.
Right.
Because they were convinced that if they used them,
we would too.
Because they had seen some of the things we did. Now, we did firebomb Dresden. We did drop a couple of nuclear weapons. But we had tremendous technological advantage over our enemies at that point.
We had radar. We had nuclear weapons. Those are both things that gave us the advantage. We would have won.
The wheel of history
would have been very costly.
Is grinding onward. And very frankly, Europe is full of weak leaders.
The United States is full of weak leaders.
The United States would we prefer in the United States to have bread and butter on the table, you know, guns and butter. We prefer butter. We don't. We have a Congress. The Republicans are saying cut the budget, including cut the military. I know they're claiming we want a strong military, but they are the ones who have
pushed sequester, which pushed, is cutting.
You know,
the military.
They may say, well, Obama came up with the idea, but still, they push it, and they trigger it, and they're cutting the budget, and they're cutting the military in the process. And so the issue really boils down to the fact that the consensus in the United States on the left and right is we should cut our military. The consensus in Europe is they have already cut their military, and they're not going to run. They're not going to meet their treaty obligation, even, as to percentage of GDP
for military
aimed at defense.
Spending. NATO treaty, yeah.
Putin knows that.
Putin's been...
And he will have a significant military advantage over everybody in that part of the world. And that part of the world is a really, really, really long ways from us. And as a result, if we will stand down just a little bit, I am reasonably confident Putin will at some point invade a NATO country because he will become overconfident and he will take their wealth and he will make his people very, very happy. And we will be forced in, we will eventually be forced into a corner where the world has to rearm and defeat Russia. I hope that doesn't happen because it will be horrifically bloody and unpleasant and destructive. But apparently the leaders in Congress haven't read much history. Not the leaders, but the members of Congress haven't read much history, and neither has the president.
Going to mention a couple of numbers here because this backs up what we're saying. Russia is spending somewhere between $70 and $84 billion on defense this year, or last year. They are upping that by 10% this year, so it's somewhere between 77 and 90 some odd billion. And this is a pretty significant percentage of its GDP while its economy is shrinking. So, having said that, Saudi Arabia is also spending a huge percentage, a much, much larger. It's spending 10% of its GDP right now on defense because they're surrounded by people that are attacking. They're not necessarily attacking them yet, but they will.
Yeah, there's a war getting ready to be cranked up between Iran and Saudi Arabia.
Right. The Shia and the
fact,
Sunni.
It's already happening.
The Sunni are represented by Saudi Arabia. Iran is representing the Shia. And you've got Yemen, and you've got Syria, and you've got the Kurds, who are just kind of stuck in the middle between the Shia and the Sunni fighting each other. The Kurds are standing there going, I just want to hold where we are, stop this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the Turks fighting the Kurds, and then not fighting some of the Kurds. And we have the Russians coming in to fight alongside the Shia.
And the Iranians.
And the Iranians, the Syria-Iranian group that also now includes Iraq. So we've got the Americans who are supporting Iran in Syria and in Iraq. Yes. Iran has brigades on the ground in Iraq. We've supplied
air support.
Okay,
but we're not supporting
them
in Syria.
We've supplied air support to Iran in
Iraq. As long as they're fighting ISIS.
Right. They're also in Syria. So in supporting them in Iran, we are supporting them in Syria, but we're fighting them in Yemen.
And it is so, if you try to read what caused World War One,
it's this.
It is that complicated.
It was in the Baltic, but it's the same thing.
And that's, it's not very far from the Baltic. This is going
no,
we've
got
to play some commercials to keep Town Square Media functioning and KTEM on the air. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and if this is Saturday, October 3rd, where you are of 2015, you're certainly welcome to give us a call at 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And Lord willing, we'll be back. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and Jake McClure. And we have a caller on 773-1400, so we know somebody may have been listening. So, caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hello. Hello?
Hello.
Hello, anybody there?
Yeah, we're here.
Can you hear us?
Okay, I can't hear you, but I just wanted to call in and repeat a quote from a guy named Alexis de Tocqueville, who came into the United States around 1830 and studied the United States and, you know, to find out how we got to be such a wonderful, great country and powerful and rich so fast. And the quote that I wanted to repeat had to do with that, but then he made a comment after that that is my main point. But the first thing he said was, America is great because America is good. And when America ceases to be good, it will cease to be great. But that's just the first part. A lot of people have heard that one. The second part of it is that people will either be ruled by the Bible or by the bayonet. And that's the part that's relevant to the Middle East. Because when we go in to the Middle East and we take out, and I'm afraid I'll say stable dictatorships, then we don't completely rule them because they're Muslim, and Muslim countries are totally incompatible with liberty and freedom. You've just got to pretty much either totally control them or it's going to turn into chaos, which is exactly what's happened.
Well, I have some disagreements there.
Yeah, I've got a, can you hear me? Can you hear us at all?
I don't think
okay, I cannot hear you
okay.
at all.
Okay,
we'll address that. Thanks for the call. I realize you can't hear us, but thank you for the call. There is a sentiment, and I can address this through behavioral economics, through the psychology of it. There's a sentiment that becomes the foundation for our knowledge. And if there's a crack in that foundation, then we don't make good decisions. The sentiment that I see again and again and again with foundational cracks in it is that Muslim countries are anathema to the United States, or Muslim countries cannot handle their own peace and security and so on. That's not true. There are quite a few countries in the world that don't have the same kind of insecurity that we see in the Middle East that are Muslim countries. Now, I just want to address that for a second. I can give you examples of that. But I would rather you look that up, those examples, because there are quite a few peace-loving countries that are Muslim-dominated.
Yeah.
Coming across to the quote
one of them is a member of NATO, by the way, and has supported us rather well. Yeah.
Turkey is a sectarian government. It is vastly Muslim. Indonesia, Philippines.
Right.
Philippines are Catholic, but it is Catholic in a way that is extreme, and yet they're able to maintain a fairly decent level of. So, having put all that aside, I would rather that first let's step over that and say, okay, we have extremist Muslims that are causing instability. That's a good thing to say. All right, and it's the same repeat of history that we saw in the ghost movement of the American Indians during the Indian Wars. It's the same repeat that we see every time a strong culture meets a weak culture. They get fundamentalist. The weak culture goes back to its roots, believes in some kind of martyrdom policy. If you look at Japan, the weak culture there, they were stronger than the other cultures of Asia, but then they hit the United States. And the United States has a culture that is the amalgamation of a lot of other cultures. We you know, a lot of liberals get upset because we take over somebody else's culture. We wear Indian headdresses and so on. Well, that's what makes our culture strong, is we take the good things of other cultures and we look at the things that we don't want and throw them out. Well, Japan went to the same martyrdom approach. That's what the kamikazes were. Our culture is being beaten by a stronger culture. And so you get to fundamentalism, which is the basis for why right now it's Muslim extremism. But 100 years ago, it wasn't Muslim extremism. It was other extremism. And sometimes it was Christian extremism. So keep that in mind. Extremism happens because people see their culture being corroded by an outside force.
If you go back in history, you'll discover that that statement you made about Muslims was also made about Ireland.
Yeah.
It was also by the English.
And that's what I mean about
Christian.
It was also
made in the 1940s about Shintoism in Japan. It was made about, I mean, we've made it over and over again. It's never been true, but that's it. Now, the other thing is I want you to look at
Can I throw in one quick thing just to hit what you just said And the same person, Alexis Tocqueville, said, "History is a gallery of pictures in which there are few originals and many copies." Mm-hmm. It's very similar to George Santayana.
I've read Alexis de Tocqueville. And yes, he said America is good. While he was traveling through the South and accepted human slavery as good. So we had to be really careful. I've read Alexis de Tocqueville. He has a lot of good things to say. And wherever you are on the political spectrum, he's kind of like St. Paul. You can find something that will support your position. He had some very interesting insights into what makes America work, not the least of which, I mean, I completely agree with his comments about property rights. I don't agree with his positions on slavery. I don't think that America was made great by the fact that we had a lot of slaves.
He said
that in his book, that, of course, he also thought Britain was great because of its use of slaves, and that was the appropriate place with people with dark skin. There's a lot of things he said that today don't make any sense. Don't take too much from de Tocqueville.
He said some really, really good things. He also said some things that if you said in public today, even your family would look at you like you were growing horns.
They were true of the vision of that time, and they're not true of today. I mean, he was actually one of the most blatant racists. I mean, but everybody else was too. And I don't think any rational person today would say that.
And he was French, so we have to throw that in there.
Right. That Colin Powell was a complete idiot because he had dark skin and should never have been a general.
I think that's insane. He was a great general.
So suffice to say that, doing good involves, if you're going to invade a country, you remake it like we did in Germany and Japan. It's very expensive. It requires a long-term commitment, and it requires the full support of Congress and the American people. And we didn't bother to get that, and we're paying the price for it now. And we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, welcome back, guys. Good to hear another live show. I don't know if you've talked about this, but can you weigh in on the candidate tax plan? And if you don't agree with any of those, what would the McClure tax plan look like? I'll hang up and listen.
All right.
There have been a couple of candidates that have produced tax plans. And at this stage in the election process, the tax plans are cupcakes. I say cupcakes because they're all icing. There's no detail about the plans. There's these concepts, these sweeping concepts. But if you dig into how are they paid for, they're too vague.
Trump's, for example, with a 25% maximum. It's the feel-good tax plan that Donald Trump presented did have some analysis that I read done on it by politically neutral economists. And basically, if you wanted to run Trump's tax plan, you'd have to pretty much eliminate the defense of the United States because you're either going to have to eliminate Social Security, Medicare,
or defense because
I don't think you can partially cut Medicare, 50% cut on all three of them. I don't think it's going to work. But he basically said we're going to lower your taxes and have a strong military, and we're not going to touch your Social Security, and we're not going to touch your Medicare. So he basically said we're going to leave the budget about 99% like it is,
but
we're
going to
cut
revenue.
The revenues by about 40% and not have a deficit. Now,
I don't see that as a problem, by the way, because that's the way every tax plan that's introduced during a presidential election looks. It doesn't run that way. It can't run that way. Basically, you go through. Let me kind of step back. Let me say that there is a problem. What he said about one section of it would probably work. The portion that he talked about with corporate tax rates.
Right.
That would probably work.
Mm-hmm.
The portion he talked about individual tax rates probably will not.
No.
And by that, I mean,
no business would be taxed, including my business, which is a sole proprietorship.
Right.
Our business, I should say.
Well, he wanted to drop the corporate tax rate down to 25% from 39.
No, he said 15.
15
for businesses.
Yeah.
And basically man, that would get my support. He wants to cut my income tax rate in half.
Yeah, for a business then has to pay employees, and employees pay taxes. So mm-hmm. if we drop the corporate rate, a lot of money
comes
back.
Not just the corporate rate. This is on private businesses, too.
Right, private.
Anything on
private
Schedule
business.
C, right.
A lot of money that's been sitting overseas for corporations would come back home.
Right.
And that would
cause... get a single shot in the arm.
We would get a huge boost to the economy, but it would be a one-time event.
Mm-hmm.
It would be really, really large, but it would be a one-time event.
Followed by some deficits that would make your eyeballs quiver.
Yeah. So let's take a step back for a second and say, in order to fix the tax code, there has to be a sweeping change, and it has to be dramatic, and it has to be bipartisan.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the tax code problems are Congress. Congress is the problem with the tax code, because they keep putting in little bits here and little bits there to the tax code, mm-hmm. and they don't look to see how it interacts with the other pieces of the tax code that are already there. That's a problem, in that everybody's taxes are wrong. If you do your taxes and it's not on an EZ form, if you do a 1040 EZ, they're probably right. Everybody else's taxes, probably wrong.
We had a simplified tax code passed in 1986. It's called the TRA-86, Tax Reduction Act of 1986.
And it was Ronald Reagan pushed
it. Which really wasn't a tax reduction act. It was revenue neutral. It was called the Tax Reduction Act.
Right. It was three tax brackets.
Right.
It was relatively simple.
It was a simple tax that you really didn't need to have a CPA do your taxes. It was basically, this is fascinating to me, it's basically what Jeb Bush has offered, which nobody likes,
right.
apparently. Jeb Bush has offered a revenue neutral tax code that just cleans out all the loopholes and special deductions.
I think that would be great. But it makes everybody that has those loopholes and special
yeah.
deductions feel like someone's taking things from them.
He will never get any popularity with it. His goal is very simple. Everybody should be able to do their own taxes in less than an hour.
This is important. We're almost out of time. But one of my definitions for a bubble in the economy is when you have a lot of very smart people being paid a lot of money to make no value. And that's what our tax preparation system is now. They're not making value. They are trying to preserve value somehow. They're trying to say, how do we pay less? Let's find some method in this massive code to pay less money to the government.
Right.
If the government made a simple code and everybody knew what they owed, it would make a lot more sense than, for instance, Congress passed the Affordable Care Act, and they have taxes in the Affordable Care Act that are based on data that you don't have yet. And if you get it wrong, then you owe penalties. So just think about that. If you have to owe taxes today,
the regular tax code has that in it.
Right. You owe taxes today for income that you don't know that you will receive by the end of the year.
Right. And that's true of regular income taxes. If you have a business and you pay quarterly.
So there are other options, and we're, again, out of time. This is one we could talk about for a long time. There are problems with our tax code, and
yeah.
I don't see any great solutions out there being represented at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, Jeb Bush is, but it's not going to pass.
The problem is democracy, and everybody wants their little piece of the cut. There have been several pretty good proposals run out there that are revenue neutral, but they get no traction because people basically want the government to spend more money on them and cut what they're paying to the government. And unfortunately, that results in huge deficits, which they also don't want. And that's called dysfunctional. We generally get tax reform when we get a war. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. And if you'd like to contact us off the air, we have voicemail on the weekends, live people during the week that answer the phone. 947-1111 is the local number, 947-1111.
You can reach that number toll-free at 1-800-914-PLAN. That's 800-914-7526. You can email us at Jeff or Jake at tpwc.com. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com. Until next hour, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.
Your Fox News station in Central Texas, News Radio 1400 KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.